It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where the weather seems to be changing again. It was a snowy fog, and that seems to be lifting a bit. Weather's lightening up. They are calling for partly sunny skies this afternoon. Northwest winds to 10. Right now at the airport, though, they are still claiming northwest winds at 7 and only 1/2 mile of visibility, although that may be improving. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak City Council will meet an hour earlier. Governor Mike Dunleavy outlined a variety of ideas to address Alaska's energy needs. And Kodiak isn't the only hydroelectric community in Alaska. Petersburg's borough-owned power plant is in its final phase of testing. That plus beavers and methane. Right after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The White House confirms the U.S. and Venezuela have agreed to a prisoner swap. President Nicolas Maduro's government agreed to release 10 American detainees, several of whom the U.S. says were wrongfully held. Venezuela also agreed to extradite fugitive Leonard Francis, widely known as Fat Leonard. The Malaysian owner of a ship servicing company is at the center of one of the largest corruption scandals in Pentagon history. In exchange, President Biden granted clemency to a Maduro ally. Alex Saab was behind bars on money laundering charges. Lawyers for former President Donald Trump say they will fight the Colorado court ruling keeping him off the state's primary ballot. The Colorado Supreme Court says Trump's disqualified because of his conduct before and during the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol January 6, 2021. NPR's Rachel Treisman reports a question is likely to end up before the U.S. Supreme Court.
The landmark ruling says that Trump is not eligible for the presidency or the ballot because his actions amounted to engaging in insurrection. The Trump campaign says it will file a swift appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. If that appeal is still pending in early January when ballots are finalized, Trump's name will stay on it. Colorado is just one of the states where liberal-leaning groups are making this argument in court, using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Experts say Colorado's ruling isn't likely to directly impact those other cases. It likely will be up to the majority conservative U.S. Supreme Court to decide the constitutional merit of Colorado's argument and what that means for Trump's candidacy. Rachel Treisman, NPR News.
Multiple civil rights groups are suing the state of Texas over a new law that enables local police to arrest migrants suspected of crossing into the U.S. illegally. But in Eagle Pass today, Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez says a surge in dangerous migrant crossings is straining border communities.
Border Patrol agents are doing everything they can to take care of the situation, but they are completely overwhelmed.
The issue remains in limbo in Congress, which is now done for the year. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced there will be no major votes again until January, but negotiators will continue their work on a deal that combines foreign aid and immigration policy. Here's NPR's Eric McDaniel.
They gave up on passing aid for Ukraine and others this year, waylaid by GOP demands for border enforcement measures. The number of migrants trying to cross, many seeking asylum, is at a record high, often in excess of 10,000 a day. And yet, talks continue. Schumer said the lawmaker negotiators were huddled just down the hall.
We, in this caucus, are committed to addressing needs at the southern border and to helping our partners and allies confront and deter serious threats in Israel, Ukraine, and the Indo-Pacific.
Immigration deals don't come easily. There's been no major reform since 1986. But getting the Senate to pass something will be easy compared to getting House Republicans to agree to or on anything border-related that could be signed into law by a Democratic president. Eric McDaniel, NPR News, The Capitol.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's City Council will now meet an hour earlier after changing their regular meeting times from 7:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. That was one item of business the council approved during its most recent meeting on Thursday. Per city code, the council has held its meetings on the second and fourth Tuesdays of every month at 7:30 p.m. The council unanimously decided it was better to have their regular meetings an hour earlier. Councilmember John Whidden hopes the amendment will encourage more people to put their names on the election ballots for Kodiak City Council.
I know there are two reasons why it's become easier to run for office. One is having meetings earlier, and it fits more with people's family times, but also the ability to have Zoom meetings, really good flexibility. So I think especially these are two actions we've just very recently taken, I think will go a long way to help us attract more candidates to office.
In other business, the council approved monetary Christmas gifts for all city employees, chose not to object to Three Sisters Marijuana Retail Store renewal application for the Wildflower Store, and adopted an alternative method for Shared Fisheries Business Tax Program. That statewide tax program divides half the funding equally between all the municipalities in the state, and the other half is divided up within specific areas like Kodiak, for instance, based on population size. According to City Manager Mike Tvingi, over $170,000 will be divvied up between the six Kodiak Island communities in fiscal year 24. The City of Kodiak's share is $32,000. All five of the present council members voted in favor of the resolution. Councilmember Annika Woods was the only one absent during Thursday's meeting. The Kodiak City Council's next regular meeting is scheduled for December 28th at 6:30 p.m. Governor Mike Dunleavy outlined a variety of ideas to address Alaska's energy needs in his budget proposal, everything from natural gas to power lines to financing. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone took a closer look at a few of them.
First, there's the immediate concern. South Central Alaska is running out of natural gas. State officials warned last January that by 2027, established fields in Cook Inlet likely won't produce enough gas to supply Alaska's largest population centers. Cook Inlet gas provides 80 to 90% of the Rail Belt's heat and electricity, according to a report from the Governor's Alaska Energy Security Task Force. Governor Mike Dunleavy says the state will provide incentives.
We're working on an initiative on Cook Inlet gas. We believe there's a lot of gas in Cook Inlet, and we just got to get it out of the ground and get it to get into the pipe.
In a recent op-ed in the Anchorage Daily News, Dunleavy said he planned to introduce a bill to, quote, improve the economics of gas production in Cook Inlet. The bill text hasn't been made public, but Dunleavy's office said in October that the proposal would reduce minimum royalties on new projects with an additional cut to royalties for the first 10 years of production. He pitched it during his budget release and tied it to efforts to lower the cost of living through stable energy supplies.
We've got to make this an inviting place for people with families. We've got to make this an inviting place for young folks to be able to afford.
But it's unclear whether breaks on royalties would spur enough drilling to ease supply concerns. This year's royalty-free lease sale, that instead relied on profit sharing, yielded only six bids, and that's similar to other recent sales, according to the Alaska Beacon. Dunleavy also referenced the long-hoped-for Alaska LNG project. That's a pipeline that would bring North Slope gas to Nikiski. Despite reports of ambivalence from potential gas customers, Dunleavy said he's optimistic.
That prospect is still being discussed at high levels in boardrooms around the world. I came back from New York and Washington about a month and a half ago, had discussions with folks in some of the investment houses. There is still a desire to get a project going.
Dunleavy's not the only one with ideas to address the looming gas shortage. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, says it's a priority for her caucus.
I think you'll see that being one of the top priorities of the legislature, not just Cook Inlet gas, but energy overall and bringing the cost down for Alaskans.
She said House Energy Committee Chair George Rauscher plans to introduce a pair of bills at the start of next year's legislative session to address the issue. An Energy Committee spokesperson said Rauscher, a Sutton Republican, was unavailable for an interview, and Tilton declined to provide details, saying she hadn't been briefed. A group of Democratic and Independent House members called for a shift towards renewable energy in an Anchorage Daily News write-up, while also recognizing the need to maintain existing gas production. Another piece of energy policy Dunleavy outlined during his budget rollout is a wide-ranging plan to upgrade the state's largest electrical grid.
Our transmission lines, in many cases on the rail belt, they're old, outdated, and what we want to do is be able to upgrade those lines so that we can put much more power on those lines in anticipation of new energy sources coming into Alaska.
In November, the Biden administration announced a $206 million grant for the Alaska Energy Authority. The money would go towards a variety of grid upgrades, including an undersea cable connecting the Kenai Peninsula to a power station on the west side of Cook Inlet, plus two battery facilities to smooth out variations in wind and solar generation. The grant requires a dollar-for-dollar state match spread over several years, which is not yet included in the governor's budget, says Budget Director Lacey Sanders.
We just received word about this funding availability, and it's going to take a little bit of time for us to get a plan that's well-developed.
House Minority Leader Calvin Schrange says power line upgrades would be transformative for the rail belt power grid. The Anchorage Independent and former Energy Committee chair points to the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Dam on the Kenai Peninsula, which the Alaska Energy Authority says provides some of the cheapest power in the state.
We have an inability to expand that and move the electricity that's needed in the interior up to the interior due to the transmission lines being limited. That electricity gets bottlenecked. So by improving our transmission lines, we can continue to build out renewables that we know work and are very low cost and move them to the places where they need electricity most.
Dunleavy also called on lawmakers to create a so-called green bank, which would help finance renewable energy and efficiency programs.
We're hoping it gets passed this year. That'll be able to, from some estimates, turn $1 into $9 additional dollars with private sector money as well as some grants.
The governor introduced bills last session that would create the Alaska Energy Independence Fund within the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, but the bills didn't make it out of committee before the House and Senate adjourned for the year. When it analyzed the bill earlier this year, the State Department of Revenue recommended seeding the account with roughly $40 million split between state and federal funds. Schrage says he's a fan of the idea, which he says has been successful in other states.
For example, if you want to put a rooftop solar project in at your house, that can oftentimes be very cost prohibitive up front. And so what this would do is it would create new funding sources to help people deploy these renewable projects.
The House and Senate convened January 16th to start working through the proposals. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And just a quick correction, the next scheduled city council meeting is actually on January 11th. That will happen at 7:30 p.m. The 6:30 meetings begin January 25th. Petersburg's borough-owned hydropower plant upgrade is in its final phase of testing. The plant is fully operational and is back to supplying a portion of the town's power. KFSK's Hannah Floor has the story.
Petersburg's utility director, Carl Hagerman, has been managing the upgrade since planning began in 2018.
It's great to be at the end of this project and see it come online. I've been working on it for 5 years, and it's pretty satisfying to see it come through and work so well.
The hydro plant supplies roughly 25% of the power that Petersburg consumes. The power plant is one of two hydroelectric sources for Petersburg's power and the cheapest one. The hydro plant is nearly 100 years old, although existing equipment was installed in the 1950s. 5 years ago, the borough hired an engineering firm to conduct a conditions assessment of the equipment. They found that some components of the plant were deteriorating. Hagerman says they recommended an upgrade to keep the facility operational and increase the amount of power it generates.
That equipment that they took a look at was built in 1955, and so we've had a really good run with that equipment, and we're hoping with the new equipment that we'll get at least the same amount of time out of that.
The hydroelectric project cost about $9.5 million, which was mostly paid for through a bond. The borough is also hoping for a roughly $3 million grant. The hydro plant is powered by water from a dam at Crystal Lake, located partway up Crystal Mountain, 17 miles south of Petersburg. Water flows through a pipeline, or penstock, down to a powerhouse, where it's pressurized. That pressurized water turns a turbine, which generates the power. After the water goes through the turbine, it flows downhill for use at a state-owned salmon hatchery. Contractors started on-site work in May. Originally, Hagerman had hoped to be done testing the new system in October, but complications pushed the finish date later than expected. Some of the concrete that needed to be torn out of the powerhouse was full of rebar, making it hard to extract. And scheduling experienced personnel to install the equipment once the site was ready proved difficult. But by late last month, the crew was finally ready. Hagerman says the testing process can take quite a bit of time.
With that many different, essentially, points of failure, they need to go through every single wire, every single point, every single mechanical device to make sure it's going to work as it was designed and we get the product that we're paying for.
Hagerman says the testing was completed earlier this month.
Good news is all the testing went very well.
The final step, something that's contractually obligated by the equipment manufacturer, is that the facility be run for 10 days straight to make sure it operates normally. Hagerman says that should be done before the holidays.
Things are really winding down, and the site is actually looking like a real site instead of a construction zone anymore. We didn't think the project would be going this far into the fall, but definitely nice to get it done before Christmas.
There are still a couple of kinks to work out. Water doesn't seem to be flowing properly to the hatchery because of an airlock, but Hagerman says they plan to fix that soon with an air valve, weather dependent. The plant upgrades are expected to last between 50 and 70 years. The vast majority of Petersburg's power comes from hydroelectricity. The borough purchases the rest from the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, or SEPA, a publicly owned consortium that supplies Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan with power at below market rates. When energy loads are high during the winter months, the borough relies on backup diesel power. In Petersburg, I'm Hannah Flohr.
There are more beavers in the Arctic, and they are busily releasing methane into the atmosphere. KUAC's Robin reports.
The warming Arctic has seen beavers spread across the region, building dams and creating methane-releasing wetlands.
How much of this is due to permafrost thaw, and how much of it is just like, hey, there's a new wetland here?
That's ecology professor Ken Tape of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute. He says methane's the second most abundant greenhouse gas in the atmosphere after carbon dioxide, and more effective at trapping heat and warming the planet.
There's a scientific interest in these beavers expanding into these permafrost regions that they're going to accelerate climate change.
Tape and his colleagues discovered a few years ago that beavers were colonizing the Arctic way north of their known range. They found thousands of new dams and ponds on what used to be flowing Arctic streams.
There's a whole bunch of ecosystem changes. When you change a little stream as wide as my office into a wetland, everything changes. It looks different. You can't boat down it. There are different creatures that live there. It's more resistant to forest fires. Changes the water quality. So there's all this, these hosts of changes. Some might be viewed as positive, some viewed as negative. Methane is one of those.
Tape says the new ponds produce methane two ways, by warming up the ground and melting permafrost, and by decomposing vegetation. In a study with colleagues published recently in the journal Environmental Research Letters, Tape reports that they found methane hotspots to be more common near beaver ponds than other water bodies. Tape says planes outfitted with a special type of imaging system from NASA are used to detect the gas hotspots.
It's like an instrument you'd have on a satellite, but it's on an airplane. They fly it low over the ground.
The system records images that are rich in data and go beyond what humans can see.
These hyperspectral instruments are super versatile. I think it was not too long ago that they figured out that they could actually see methane with this instrument.
The NASA flyovers are part of a project called Arctic Boreal Vulnerability Experiment, or ABOVE. They make data available to scientists across the Arctic U.S. and Canada. Tape says his next step is to try to measure methane from the ground to complement the airborne imagery.
Next summer, we're going to get out there with these methane flux chambers and go to some of these hot spots where the imagery says, yeah, lots of methane's coming out here.
He says there are a lot of new questions about Arctic climate change and beavers creating wetlands.
This study, it really cracks the door open on this issue, but to be quite honest, it is not the last word.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 1979, GCI has invested in the future of Alaska. GCI is committed to keeping schools and healthcare facilities connected for Alaskans. More information at gci.com/business.
Kodiak residents watched a parade of boats this weekend for the annual Harbor Lights Festival, but they weren't the only ones appreciating holiday festivities. KMXT's Brian Benoit attended the Kodiak Filipino-American Association's Christmas party and has this report.
Kodiak Phil-Am celebrated Christmas with loud music and even a few rounds of musical chairs over the weekend. Kodiak's population is just about half Filipino, and hundreds of people came to celebrate the upcoming holiday. Mark Anthony Biscocho is the president of Kodiak Phil-Am. He says he was happy with the turnout this year.
Representation of our community is very hard to find nowadays, so events like this kind of helps. Oh, okay, there's something going on. Let's go out. Let's bring my family.
There was also a dance floor and, of course, plenty of food. In true Filipino tradition, there was even karaoke. Biscocho says they wanted the celebration this year to be a bit more casual.
We've been working so hard throughout the years. Let's just relax.
Yeah.
I just want to relax because, you know, preparing this, it's very... You get caught up with the holiday events that's happening that you can't even enjoy.
Before Biscocho, he says he's already planning events for Phil-Am next year, like getting youth more involved with the organization.
Very excited for the association because we get the youth going, and then now I found teachers that want to help give back to the community to help out the Filipino culture, so I'm working on that too.
The organization's next major public event will be a Kodiak version of Flores de Mayo, which is a flower festival in the Philippines. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
With mortgage rates down, home sales are up. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The National Association of Realtors says sales of existing homes climbed 0.8% in November, the first increase in 6 months. Interest rates on 30-year home loans began to drop in November and are now below 7%. The IRS is waiving penalties for millions of Americans who still owe for tax years 2020 and 2021. This applies to those who owe less than $100,000. The agency is mailing reminders for back taxes. Regulators say U.S. Bank will pay $36 million because its anti-fraud controls froze some legitimate unemployment benefit payments during the height of the pandemic. The bank says it faced unprecedented challenges at the time. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 20th day of December, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:51. It will set again at 4:22 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 31 minutes, only 16 seconds less than yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 45 degrees, set in 1951 and in 1917, and our record low was 4 degrees, set in 2001. Currently 33 degrees. The sun is actually starting to break through the clouds, which was predicted. This afternoon they are looking for partly sunny skies, northwest winds 5 to 10. For tonight, a slight chance of rain and snow showers before midnight. Mostly cloudy overnight with the low of 24, northwest winds around 10. And mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 34, west winds to 10 or 15. Mostly clear overnight Thursday night too, but snow is likely before noon on Friday, followed by rain and snow, and then followed by rain. High near 39 on Friday, and look for east winds to blow up to 35, could gust as high as 45 on Friday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up that will happen at 2:27 this afternoon here on the west side and be 2.2 feet. Our next high tide will be at 8:17 this evening and be 6 1/3 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 3:10 this afternoon and be 3.3 feet. followed by a high tide at 8:51 p.m. of 10.5 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tonight. Variable 10 expected to become northwest 20 this afternoon with 8-foot seas. Variable 10 again tonight, except north of Dangerous Cape, northwest 15, increasing to 25 after midnight with 6-foot seas. And for Thursday, northwest 20 seas to 7 feet. I should say that for Friday, they are predicting southeast winds to 40 knots, seas to 12 feet, with 17-foot seas on Saturday. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, variable 10 today, becoming northeast this afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, north 20 and seas to 4 feet. And for Thursday and Thursday night on our west side, west winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. However, on Friday on our west side, east winds to 40 knots with 10-foot seas in the Chillicothe on Friday. Here are some of the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On December 19th, the Fire Protection Area, it's December 20th. Today, December 20th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board's regular meeting will happen in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's conference room. That's happening at 5:15 p.m. Also today, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. tonight. Tomorrow, the Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. And 1 week from tomorrow, on December 28th, the Assembly will be having its work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers, also at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office with any questions at 907-486-9310. The borough offices and all other borough facilities will be closed to the public on Monday, December 25th, in observance of the Christmas holiday. Things going on at the library include today's version of the Lego Club. That happens at 3:30 p.m. today. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. is the preschool story time. That's for children ages 3 to 6. Also Thursday, at 3 p.m. is the next chess club gathering. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary at all, and it's open to all ages. On Fridays at 10:30 a.m., the library hosts its Lap Sit story time for babies up to 3 years old. And it's story time with a twist at the library, STEAM and a story. Ms. Kate will read the book The Very Last Castle, and follow up with building small catapults. Oh, that sounds like fun. That's happening Saturday, December 23rd, this Saturday at 11 a.m. at the library for kids kindergarten through 8th grade. And the library will also be closed Monday, December 25th for the Christmas holiday, and they'd like to wish the Kodiak community happy holidays. The Angels of Love program goes on for the placing your loved one's name on an angel on display on the holiday hospital trees displayed at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center through January 13th. It's a way to honor the life of someone you miss or celebrate the life of someone you admire. $10 donation for each angel. Please make your donations either in person at hospital admitting at the specialty clinic reception desk. You can also pay online at www.kodiakhospitalauxiliary.org. Diaper Distribution Day is coming up this Friday. It's from 4 to 7 p.m. at 1910 East Razanov. The Diaper Distribution Center is a ministry of the Frontier Southern Baptist Church. Diapers are available in all sizes on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last. And size swaps are welcome. Bring outgrown diapers in good condition and trade them in for your baby's current size. Again, that's 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday at 1910 East Razanov. The Audubon Society's Christmas bird count for Chiniac and Narrow Cape is coming up on December 30th. Birders of all ages and abilities are welcome to contribute to this fun nationwide community science project. The compiler arranges volunteers into small parties who follow assigned routes, counting every bird they see. Some people also watch feeders instead of following routes. Interested field bird and feeder watchers must arrange with the count compiler in advance to participate and to sign up for the Narrow Cape and Chiniac count, which is Saturday, December 30th. Contact Robin Corcoran. That phone number is 907-654-0997. Again, that's the Christmas bird count. It's the 124th annual Christmas bird count. And Scuttlebutt is still going on Tuesdays, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. It's a free weekly storytelling workshop for students in grades 9 through 12. That's happening at 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. on Tuesdays at the library's craft room. For more information, call 486-7396.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.